This is Anthony Iannarino, and you're listening to In the Arena. Step into the arena. Give it all that you got. Into the arena. It's time to make it your best shot. Chase the dream and break the scene. Your opportunity is right here. It's right here. It's right now. Welcome to my arena. I haven't been at this podcasting game too long, so it's strange to bring in a guest that I've already had, but when that guest is Bob Berg, you know it's going to be okay. I'm always thrilled to talk to Bob, and sometimes on Sunday mornings we ring each other on Skype and end up having long conversations about all kinds of interesting things, and Bob is just a super guy. I know you read Go Giver, but his new book is out, Adversaries into Allies, so I invited Bob on proactively, because I really want to share this book. I think that the ideas and the concepts are so important, and I know that when you're out there selling and working on these issues, you run into obstacles, you run into adversaries, and I really like books that are toolkits, and this book is a toolkit that you can use. So without further ado, let's bring in Bob Berg. Hey, Bob, how are you?
Great, Anthony. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thanks for being here. I appreciate it.
Always enjoy speaking with you.
So I'm holding in my hand Adversaries into Allies. Win people over without manipulation or coercion. This is such a timely book, too, and I recognize more and more of us and the world of sales end up calling on customers or dealing with clients, and we sometimes have some adversarial relationships within those accounts, and we're always challenged by these. And I just want to start off and ask you a few questions about the central premise here. And then some questions about how you do some of these things as we talk about the book. So let me just fire one right at you, because I know you're always ready for these anyway. The difference between persuasion and manipulation, and it's such an interesting point to talk about. When I was young and I thought about salespeople, I thought that they were self-oriented, manipulative, and selfish, and mostly were not. There are still a few that are. But what's the real difference between persuasion and manipulation? And can you just add a little bit about what influence really is?
Well, yeah. Well, let's begin with influence, and that will sort of set the premise. Influence, Anthony, is really nothing more than the ability to move a person or persons to a desired action, usually within the context of a specific goal. That's all that influence is. It's how we do it that is really what makes the difference. You ask about persuasion and manipulation, and it's such a great question, because when you think of it, they're cousins of one another. Why? Well, because both the persuader and the manipulator both understand human action and human motivation. And they'll both tap into it, but with different results and different intent. The best definition or explanation I've ever heard of the two was in a book by Dr. Paul Sweat. It's actually written back in the 80s. The title of the book is The Art of Talking So That People Will Listen, and yet his book was much more about listening than it was about talking, and it was really a brilliant book. Dr. Sweat is out of Memphis, Tennessee, I believe. And what he said, and I love this, and I'm quoting him, he wrote, "Manipulation aims at control, not cooperation. It results in a win-lose. It does not take into consideration the good of the other party." Now, in direct contrast to the manipulator, the persuader always seeks to enhance the self-esteem of the other person. The result is that people act more responsibly because they're treated as responsible, self-directing individuals. So, in a sense, it's intent, and it's true intent. And what the manipulator, Anthony, doesn't really understand is that not only is manipulation not good life practice, it's bad business practice. The manipulative leader can have employees, but never a team.
Right.
The manipulative salesperson can make a sale and make many sales, but very rarely have a sustainable business based on what we call walking ambassadors. They tend to get very few referrals and repeat business, and they'll lose customers to the person who comes along who's honest and trustworthy and so forth and communicate that. The manipulative family member can still have a family that loves one another, but very rarely healthy, productive relationships. So really, not only is the intent the difference, but what happens is the results are much different.
It's interesting. I see manipulation as something that you do to somebody because it's in your self-interest, and persuasion as something that you do to help somebody get what's really in their best self-interest. You're probably familiar with Mark Skousen's work, Persuasion versus Force, right?
I love him. I have his pamphlet somewhere right around. I read it. Again, I've read that pamphlet a bunch. He's wonderful. He's terrific.
And it's interesting because the more in tune I get with what leadership really is, and as you watch, force is the choice that people who are unpersuasive and don't have influence really use to get what they want because they believe they have a higher spot on the org chart, or they believe that they can get somebody to do something. And influence is something very different, and you get people to do it and want to do it because they want to follow versus being forced to.
Well, that's the key. And, you know, that we're really talking about compliance.
Yes.
And as a leader, as a salesperson, which you are a leader when you're a salesperson, but whether you're leading a team of 1,000 or a three-person committee or what have you, the challenge with coercion, in a sense, which is really what manipulation is. It's coercion. What was the word we just used? I'm trying to think.
Force.
Force. The challenge with that is that, and I love what Dondi Scumaci, a great friend of mine, says. A great leadership speaker. She says persuasion. Coercion will never take you where commitment can go.
Right.
And that's a compliance. That was the word. Yeah, compliance will never take you where commitment can go. Someone will comply with you when you have what's called positional authority. But positional authority, which depends upon compliance, not commitment, it will never take you very far, because as soon as someone is not forced to do what you want, hey, you know, and Dale Carnegie said it way back, at, you know, 70, 80 years ago, he said, people do things for their reasons,
right,
not
right.
our reasons. And so the influencer, Anthony, must continually question themselves. How does what I'm asking this other person to do, how does that align with their goals, with their wants, with their needs, with their desires? How does what I'm asking this other human being to do, how does it align with their values? And when asking ourselves these questions, intelligently and authentically, not with a desire to manipulate another person for our ends, but with a desire to genuinely help and build another human being, you've gone a long way toward earning that commitment.
We deal with adversaries, and we might call them obstacles. We have different names for them, but we have stakeholders within our client accounts and our prospective client accounts when we have these kinds of relationships who are adversarial. I guess if you could talk just a little bit about how do you start out preparing to deal with an adversarial client when you know you're walking into the adversarial relationship?
Well, you know, it's interesting because this almost sounds a little kind of out there, but it's really not. The first thing is to adjust our own attitude. Because what happens is when we know they're adversarial in nature, what do? We go in with sort of a defensive, almost protective, adversarial nature about us. And then they, what we've done is we've set a negative frame. And we talk about frame. You know, a frame, what is a frame? A frame is a premise. A frame is the foundation from which everything else is going to take place. So when we buy into that frame, and then what we end up doing is we set that frame, that person's going to go right with it. They're going to react to that frame. Now, and they're going to be even tougher than what in more adversarial. If we can go in there adjusting our attitude, I always say positive expectation works, but not for the reason we think it does. It's not that just by expecting the person to all of a sudden be win-win in nature and friendly and be a be an ally as though that's just going to happen. No, what happens is when we expect something positive from that other person, we change. We change our attitude, and that's what causes them to change. Why? Because when we go in there with a calmness, when we go in there with a serenity, when we go in there expecting this person to be an ally and expecting this person to be a good, fair, honest person, what happens is they're now going to respond. We've reset the frame. Now, that doesn't mean they're all of a sudden going to change. If they're a certain way, that doesn't mean they're all of a sudden changing. We've also got to be patient, and we've got to be persistent. We need to not buy in to their adversarial nature. And we can actually retrain that person in a fairly quick period, actually a very quick period of time, to then accept that frame and go along that way.
I have this. I had the physical experience of this when I practiced Aikido. And in Aikido, someone would come in with force, and it took me a long time, a lot longer than it probably would have taken somebody smarter than me, to figure out that the premise of Aikido is not to greet force with force.
Right.
But you have a certain attitude, even the physical part of it coming towards you, and you feel that. And so you say, I'm just going to give it right back. And you walk in with that. And about, I don't know, it took me 6 months. But at 6 months, a number of the black belts or Sandan third degree black belts came to me and said, you realize the best thing to do when force is coming towards you is to just get out of the way and let it go by. You don't have to engage with that. And I had the light bulb moment, and I went, wait a second, this isn't about Aikido, is it? And well, it's not.
Yeah, it's the tree that yields with the wind instead of trying to stand up straight and break it. Sure. That's a great point. You're one of the best at this anyway. So, you know, you're one of these people. You don't need the book. You already do these things very intuitively.
I need the book. I have the book. You and I are on video. They're only listening, but I have the book in my hands, and it's wonderful. And it's the kind of book we're definitely going to press the book here, but it's the kind of book that's a toolkit. So it's not one of these books that's a theory. It's a theory with the practical tools so that you can actually read this book and then know how to go and have these conversations, which I think is the most important thing when people are reading. They're going to be able to go and take action based on what they read here.
Thank you.
Let me follow that up. So we know that part of this is us, but we have this challenge with adversarial people, and some of it is the belief system that we come into these relationships with. How do we monitor and keep our beliefs in check as we enter into the kinds of difficult conversations and adversarial relationships that we have?
Sure. Well, the first thing we do is we say, what are our beliefs really? Because, you know, the principle number two is acknowledge the clash or understand the clash of belief systems. And the clash of belief systems is powerful. Why? Well, what is a belief? A belief is simply the lens through which we see the world. They call it a paradigm or a map or whatever you want to call it. Now, our belief systems, Anthony, are, as you know, they're formed from the beginning. I mean, it's a combination of environment, school, upbringing, environment, schooling, news media, television shows, movies, and everything that touches our senses in any way. And they're formed at a very young age, and they're, more importantly, they're formed without our even being aware of it. We don't have the sensors in our mind to know that we need to be guarding everything that comes into our mind and checking premises and asking, is this true? Why is it true? Who says this? Why should it be that way, right? So we just accept these things, and we don't even know it. So most of all of us, really, are a servant to a belief system that we had nothing to do with creating and don't even know exists. Now, the other person is the exact same. The only difference is, you know, you and I and people who study this, which a lot of your listeners do, we now, you know, we know that we're victim to this. You know, we know that this is, so we could be maybe a little bit more aware of it, but most people aren't. And so we go in with these beliefs, the other person goes in with their beliefs, and as human beings, we tend to think that other people see the world as we see the world.
We know that's not true about you and me.
Oh, of course not. And so, so what happens is the first thing we need to do is always, again, I'm going to go back to that phrase, check our premises, check our beliefs. Why do we believe a certain way? Why might this other person believe a certain way? By the way, the belief systems, Anthony, go back to and not just our own life, but of our ancestors and back all the way to the cave person days when it was a matter of survival. People, see, it's consistency. We needed to make major decisions based on very limited information. Why? Because our ancestors who were out hunting, they needed to know that the same sound they heard today was the same sound that was going to mean the same thing the next day. They had to know when they went out hunting if this sound they heard from an animal was that of a potential dinner or of a potential diner. And they, now we don't need those sort of instinctual things, but it still holds. And so one of the things that we can do is simply first be aware that we are run by our own unconscious belief system. Secondly, be aware that the other person is run by their unconscious belief system. Third, be aware that neither of us knows what that other person really does believe. And then just ask questions. For example, when they use a certain term, use a certain word, make a certain, let's ask the question, and of course we do it in a very kind and tactful way, which would be just, for my own clarification, Anthony, when you say, and then use the term they use or whatever, what exactly does that mean? Or, just so I don't make a mistake, we can use an iMessage. When you say that you want this, this report or that it needs to be on time, but you're not quite concerned with the so-and-so, so-and-so, which is more important to you? Or what do you exactly mean by, what I'm saying? So we do this in a way that we keep misunderstandings from happening in the first place. But we can only do that when we understand that the way they use a word or they define a word or use a term maybe isn't the way we would.
It's seek first to understand, right? And then once you can dissect and understand the belief system, you've got a better understanding of what already influences them, what their real goals and real needs are.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Close enough.
Once we understand them, it's also incumbent upon us to make sure they understand us. I remember a mentor once saying, Berg, when the shooter misses the target, it ain't the target's fault. So we've got to understand that when we say something too, and of course, seek first to understand, as Dr. Covey said, and then we've got to make sure that once we need to know they understand us. So what we do is we ask questions, again, in a tactful, not a condescending way, but in a tactful, polite kind of way, to make sure that what we believe was said is what they understand.
It's funny. I teach undergrads and they all believe that their beliefs are their own. And that they're individuals and that they're unique in their belief systems. And I ask them by just show of hands, how many have the same political party affiliation as their parents? And every hand goes up. Occasionally I get one out of maybe 25 that has a different political party affiliation. Religion.
Most of them are sure the same religion.
Parents sent them to school. They're there at school because that was an expectation that was set by society and by their parents. And it takes them a little while to come to the realization that most of the things they believe weren't theirs. We're infected by beliefs. And so we walk into adversarial relationships with all the infections that we're carrying for the things that we believe. And we're sitting down with somebody who doesn't know that they're infected with theirs. And I think it makes communication more difficult until you understand that lens that you described. Once you understand their lens, it's easier to understand why they're behaving in the way that they are and maybe help turn some of the adversarial nature off.
Absolutely. Yes.
So one more question for you. And this one I think is a fun question. So I occasionally have stakeholders and clients and you can come across somebody who's just particularly nasty and foul, just a rotten human being. And in your book, you talk about empathy. So let me ask you two questions. Why should I exercise empathy when I come across a nasty, foul, rotten human being? And how do I exercise my empathy when I'm under that kind of pressure in the relationship?
Sure. First, in terms of why you should be empathetic, I'm not saying you should or shouldn't be, or that anyone should or shouldn't be. And I certainly am not saying that you should ever be a doormat or a martyr or self-sacrificial in any way. You know, if someone's rude or nasty, you need to let them know that's not an acceptable way to do it. Now, you don't have to do it by yelling and screaming back at them. You can simply say, you know, and you wait till they finish talking, so you're not in a verbal shouting match, and then you let them know, you know, I love the idea, or I appreciate the idea that we might be able to do business together, but it's also necessary that we both show each other respect in our dealings with one another. And so you just say it in a way that's not emotional, you know, that's not defensive, and they either accept that or they don't. But in terms of empathy, I mean, what is empathy? The dictionary defines it as the identification with or vicarious experiencing of the attitudes, thoughts, and feelings of another person. So, you know, someone might say, well, Bob, isn't that just putting yourself in the other person's shoes? And I'd say, well, yeah, it would be, except we need to realize that most of us have different sized feet. So we might think we understand, but we often don't. And we may have had shared experiences. And, you know, to a certain level, we can empathize. And not only do we empathize, but we need to be able to communicate with that person that we do empathize. But what about when we don't? Because sometimes not only do we not know exactly how that person feels, Anthony, sometimes we have absolutely no clue how that person feels, but we can understand and we can communicate that they understand, that we understand that they're feeling something, and that something might be very distressing to them. And to the degree that we can, we're there for them and to, you know, to help them, and that's fine. But that should never be misconstrued with letting anyone, you know, just walk over us or what have you. But empathy is very important, because when we can understand that that other person is feeling something that's below the surface, now we're able to ask questions, we're able to actively listen. And when, and, you know, sometimes somebody just needs to know that someone is listening to them and that someone does want to understand them and be there with them. You know, I was in a doctor's office, where they do blood testing, you know, and a woman walks in, an elderly lady walks in, and she was very agitated, very upset, very adversarial, if you will. And the nurse receptionist who was greeting her said, well, how can I help you? And the woman was just very upset. The elderly went, well, I can't believe I had to come back. You lost my blood test. And how could you? Well, what did the nurse practitioner say? She just says, please have a seat. We'll be right with you. There was absolutely, actually wasn't rude, but there was absolutely no feeling or no empathy for this person. Right. And so the woman was just, you know, she looked like she was going to explode. And she kind of laughingly but defensively said, I'm telling you, if you all do this again, I'm never coming back here. And, you know, she was seething when she sat down, and I didn't blame her. All she wanted was for this nurse practitioner to say, oh, I am so sorry that happens. That must just be so frustrating for you to have had to come back here. I just want to let you know that I apologize on behalf of the company. I'll find out what happened, and we'll make sure this doesn't happen again. That's all she had to say. Not only would she have made this woman feel so comfortable and so good, Anthony, but she'd have had a fan for life for this, for this diagnostic testing center, but showed absolutely no empathy whatsoever.
It's really caring about other human beings.
It is.
And, you know, I wrote the story in a newsletter a few months ago about a client I had who was particularly nasty. She would cuss, she would scream, she would bluster, anything that she could do. And I took her abuse for a long time, and it never bothered me one way or another. But I recognized that there was something underneath the surface. And one day I sat down in front of her desk, and she was exhausted. And she explained to me that her husband had cancer. He'd had limbs amputated. He was going through chemo. And she was working, you know, 12-hour days in her job and then spending the night sleeping at the hospital with her dying husband. And then I got the full dose of reality, which was that this had nothing to do with me in the first place. And sometimes it has nothing to do with us. But she felt better about me because she had somebody to share that with and to tell that story. And our relationship changed once she got the chance to tell me why she was behaving that way.
I remember that post. It was a brilliant article, and it's absolutely so true. You know, we don't know how another person feels. We don't know what's going on in another person's head and in another person's life. So, yeah, that was fantastic.
Well, first off, the book's not out yet, but I happen to have mine because I know people, so I got a copy. It's a wonderful book. Where do we send people? Because I know you're going to give them a chapter. So where do we send people to pick that up in advance of the book launch?
Yeah, actually, the title, Adversaries Into Allies, that's also the name of the website. So it's www.adversariesintoallies.com. And yes, while they're there, they can get the introduction and chapter one. And there are about 28 pages. So I think we provide enough information there for them to see if the book is congruent with how they would like to do things.
My opinion on this book is there's a few books that I've read, and I'm more than halfway through this one, that are important enough to say this is the kind of real life stuff that you have to deal with. You need a frame, you need an understanding of how and why things work the way they do, and you need a plan for dealing with it. And it's an actionable book, which I really like. So you can take it and say it's a toolkit, and you can go put it to work. So that's why I like it, and I appreciate it so much. I appreciate all your work.
Well, thank you, Anthony. Likewise.
And we'll send people to Berg.com as well, and on Twitter.
Absolutely, at Bob Berg. With a U.
At Bob Berg with a U. We'll send him there too. Thanks so much for your time.
Anthony, thanks. It's always such a pleasure to be with you. Just continue to do such amazing work.
What's the launch date?
Launch is October 31st.
October 31st. Okay. We'll send him there.
Ah, thank you, my friend.
He is Bob Berg, and you can find him at berg.com. That's B-U-R-G.com. You can also follow him on Twitter at Bob Berg. Also, adversariesintoallies.com. You'll find the link in the show notes. Go there and download the first chapter now. I am Anthony Iannarino, and you can find me at thesalesblog.com. When you show up, do sign up for the newsletter, and I'll see you next week back here in the arena.